Welcome to Off the Chart with Medical Economics, a podcast featuring lively and informative conversations with healthcare experts, opinion leaders, and practicing physicians about the challenges facing doctors in medical practices today. I'm Jeff Bendix, Senior Editor of Medical Economics.
I'm speaking today with Dr. Shaun Purvoy, Director of the Malvern Family Medical Clinic in Malvern, Arkansas. Arkansas has one of the lowest vaccination rates in the country, and Dr. Purvoy heads a coalition of independent doctors working to persuade their patients to get the COVID-19 vaccine. The coalition recently produced a video public service announcement to help get out their message. Dr. Purvoy is here to talk about that, as well as other strategies doctors can use to overcome vaccine hesitancy among their patients. Welcome, Dr. Purvoy, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
What's the situation you're currently seeing in your clinic and community in regard to COVID-19?
Well, we're currently seeing a high rate of positivity in the community as far as this most recent COVID surge is concerned. We're seeing a lot of that in our clinic as well. Our daily volume is way up. Our county, the county that I'm a resident in, is one of the leading counties in the state in terms of active cases. And so, as you mentioned, we do have also a low vaccination rate. And so we're just really seeing a lot of illness. All our hospitals are full and our ICUs are full of COVID patients. And so we're sort of like everyone else in the state. And I guess to some degree, lots of places in the country were just really topped out in terms of our capacity and what we're seeing on a daily basis.
Has it gotten worse in the last, over the summer?
Oh, yes, definitely over the last, I would say, 4 to 6 weeks. You know, we had a little reprieve in the spring and everyone was sort of, stopping their, I don't know, daily worry. We were kind of thinking maybe this was going to be an exit from what we'd seen. And then about 6 weeks ago, we started seeing a few cases trickle in. Of course, we were reading about the Delta variant. And then about a month ago, it really picked up and we've just been gangbusters ever since in terms of getting calls every day and seeing these patients in the office as well.
When did the Arkansas Coalition get started? Give me a little background about that.
Sure. Well, all these practices that joined in our effort, we're all part of an accountable care organization that works with a company called Allidade out of Bethesda, Maryland. Allidade is a practice and primary care. They call themselves primary care enablers. They really work with independents like myself and help us in the Medicare Shared Savings Program as an accountable care organization. So we already were familiar with one another. We've been working together now, some of us for over 5 years. And it's been a good way for us to network. We're all in this accountable care organization, but that by the very nature of us having to work together and meet a lot virtually, we already have this network across the entire state of practices who typically would have been independents that didn't, we wouldn't have known each other. We're not in the same county or a town. And so we would really not have known what was going on unless we had some personal relationship with each other. Now, we already had this in place. And so, we were all sort of brainstorming one day, several of us, about, gosh, what could we do about this low vaccination rate in this surge? And we wished that we could get out in front of this because as primary care providers, well, we feel like we're in the best position for a lot of these patients who are on the fence about the vaccine to be able to talk to them, share with them our own testimonial that we've had the vaccine, our families had the vaccine, our staff has had the vaccine. And we just didn't have a good way. I mean, we can do it one at a time when the patient comes into our office, but we thought it would be great if there was a way that we could sort of pronounce that we're out here and we're in favor of the vaccine and we're not, the system or some type of big group of, either media or government or hospital systems. We're just, your family doctor. And that was the idea. So actually, Dr. Jock Cobb, one of the doctors in our group, said, man, it would be great. I wish we could just make a commercial. And after that, we started thinking about maybe that wouldn't be such a bad idea. And so I reached out to Allidade, actually, and said, this is an idea we have. What do you think? And Allidade's in, you know, over 30 markets all over the country. And they thought, well, you know, this isn't something we normally do. We don't make video in terms of our PR stuff. But, you know, this would be a service. It'd be a service to our doctors and our doctors' patients. And so they agreed to help us with this. And they reached out to a local television station. And we made our video. And then Allidade is so happy with that. And we've been so happy with the result that we've gotten. I mean, all of us are getting feedback from our practice, from our patients in our practices, that they've seen this on television, that I think Allidade wants to try and promote this in a lot of other markets if they can, as a way for primary care to kind of, you know, reach out to their patients. We didn't think early on that primary care was involved to the level that it should be, at least in our state. I can't speak for other states, when it came to early vaccination efforts. I mean, it was hard for us to get the vaccine. I know hospitals had it and pharmacies had it, and we're certainly thankful for that. But as independents, we couldn't get it early on. It was just a matter of supply from the government. And we really felt like had we had it early on, we really could have made an effort to reach out to our patients. And we're still doing that. And we don't think that it's too late to do that. But because we already felt like, man, you know, we're behind the eight ball in this situation, we thought putting ourselves out there would be a good idea. We've been real pleased with it. And I have patients come in and say something to me on a daily basis now. And we've seen our vaccination rates, all of us, up have an uptick in the last, I don't know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks since this Delta variant has really been surging. We're having more and more people call, come in, or agree when we're talking to them, yeah, I'll go ahead and get the vaccine. So we're able to give it. And so therefore, we think it's been a success.
Well, let's take a listen to the audio of that vaccine, of that PSA, okay. Excuse me.
Okay.
How many members of this coalition are there?
Well, we have multiple practices across the state, and we have multiple community health centers. We have over 10 community health centers now, and many of them have over 10 sites. So when we start looking at the actual number of sites on the ground, we're close to 150 or more across the state that has 75 counties. So, I mean, we've got a big, broad presence across the entire state of Arkansas.
For a state the size of Arkansas, that's pretty good.
Yeah, we feel like, you know, even though we're an organization that is derived for the purpose of being in the accountable care organization in the Medicare Shared Savings Program, we also have contracts with Blue Cross and Blue Shield in this state. We deal with Medicare Advantage. We deal with Medicaid. And so when you start looking at the lives that we touch, not just the Medicare lives, but all payer lives, I mean, we're going to be bumping next year 300,000. I mean, that's potentially getting close to 10% of our state's population. So we really feel like we've got we're in a good spot to make a difference in terms of reaching out to a large number of patients.
What percentage of your patients or the clinic's patients have gotten at least one COVID vaccination? Do you know?
No, I don't know in terms of percentage. Part of the reason that I don't is because patients are getting those in so many different places. You know, they'll get some in my office. We have the Moderna vaccine here in my office, but they get them still at pharmacies and also at our local hospital. So I wouldn't be able to guess, although we have seen an uptick statewide now, so that we're getting close to, I think, 45% statewide. But of course, that's regional. The urban areas are much better than the rural areas. And, you know, most of us, I shouldn't say that. We're spread out. I mean, we have practices in the capital city. We also have practices in places that, you're not driving through, you're driving to. You know, so we definitely have a pretty big group mix in terms of urban versus rural. But I think most of us are in a position where we as a group of clinics do better than our general area, who, you know, like patients who don't have a primary care doctor. Obviously, the ones who do, we're trying to send out media. We're trying to talk to them. We're trying to catch them at their wellness visits, or when they come in for, you know, they say their knee hurts. Every one of them is getting the blitz every time about, hey, let's talk about this vaccine. We try not to push in terms of being judgmental or, you know, too heavy handed, but at the same time, we don't want there to be any mistake about how we feel about it. And we think that, you know, when you can have a one-on-one conversation with a patient, that's what makes a difference. I mean, patients, by and large, if they get a primary care doctor that, or nurse practitioner for that matter, that they have been going to see for some time, then there's a trust and relationship that gets built. And even if patients still have a lot of questions and reservations, they value the opinion of someone that they know that's in the field. So if I tell somebody, sure, no one's going to be able to give you a guarantee that nothing in the future will ever happen if you take this vaccine, no one's going to do that. All I can tell you is I gave it to my children. You know, then sometimes that makes a difference for your patient. And it might be the one thing that makes enough difference that they decide to go ahead and do it. I visited with two patients yesterday who were fairly adamant about not getting the vaccine before they came in the office. And before they left, they both had been vaccinated. So we're still making some difference one-on-one.
What reasons do you hear for for not wanting to get the vaccine, or what questions do you hear?
Well, the reasons, you know, span the gauntlet, obviously, between I'm not going to let anybody tell me what to do, to I don't trust the government, to I'm worried what the vaccine might do to me someday. And so, you know, that's the kind of the reasons. The questions that people have are it's kind of strange. They don't necessarily have questions that they're ready with, but when you start having a discussion, then they'll start to ask some questions, you know, like, okay, well, for instance, we've tried to visit with patients about how they were able to develop these vaccines so quickly, you know, and dispel some of the myths about corners being cut, or they didn't do all the phases like they normally would. Sometimes just being able to have a calm conversation with somebody, that's real helpful. So that's one thing. We get a lot of, I'm afraid if I give it to my daughter, she'll be infertile. So we refer them to the, you know, ACOG website. Say, well, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology recommend that your daughter get it. And oh, by the way, at UAMS in Little Rock, early last month, 20% of their admissions for COVID were pregnant or immediately postpartum women who were not doing well. Wow. Or I've told them, hey, I have a couple of employees who are pregnant and they both have gotten the vaccination. So being able to say those things or tell them that I give it to my 24-year-old daughter sometimes allows them to go, okay, you know, I use the example all the time that I could do all the research in the world to figure out how to, you know, redo the plumbing in my house and do a lot of Googling and get a lot of information. But at the end of the day, I'm probably going to ask the plumber that I know what he or she would do. And that's the way we try to approach it as well.
Speaking of, do you find that people are getting wrong information from social media, or where besides yourself are they getting their information?
You know, I do find that, but we try our best, or at least I do, to steer away from the rabbit hole conversation about, well, what's your source, or why, you know, what are you doing? You know, I had a patient that was in last week that told me they didn't want to get the vaccine because they didn't trust the government for anything. And I said, well, you know, okay, do you buy eggs and meat and milk at the grocery store? They said, well, of course I do. I said, well, you know, the government inspects all those things and you trust the government. to make sure that that's, you know, safe for you. You trust the government to make sure that your car passes inspections at the manufacturing level, so you don't, you know, die going down the interstate. You do trust the government. You've just forgotten that the government plays a role in those issues because it's just, you know, ubiquitous. And so when I can have that conversation with a patient and say, you know, let's talk about what you really are talking about here. What you're really talking about is this is something new, something that's unknown, and you're getting a lot of information from a lot of different sources. And any time that people get differing information from differing resources, they'll start to say, and I hear this all the time, I don't know who to trust. You can't trust anybody. And I just remind them that that's not really true, that there probably are people out there that you can't trust. But in order to try and figure out who you can trust, you need to talk to somebody that you know for sure you already do trust. And if you trust me to tell you what you should do if we find a cancer in your chest, or what you should do if we discover that you've developed diabetes, then you probably need to trust me to help you decide what you should do about a deadly disease that's killing Americans every day, not just in places that you're not familiar with, but down the street or in your church or, you know, at your work. I mean, we've lost in my practice several patients to the pandemic. And that's one thing that you can do, because once that information gets in the newspaper and it's an obituary, you know, then you can talk to the patients about it. It's not a HIPAA violation. And once you can talk to them, they say, yeah, I know him. He works with my brother or whatever. Those kind of close to home stories. And when you explain to a patient, you know, no one can tell you for sure what's going to happen with this vaccine 10 years down the road. No one can do that, although I believe it to be safe, but I can tell you for sure what can happen to you if you get the COVID virus within the next 2 or 3 weeks, because I've seen it and so have you. And so that's pretty powerful for a lot of these patients. I think we have still a pretty good number of patients who are on the fence, that are convincible that you can visit with them. And as long as you respect their questions and you know, take some time to talk them through it, then they can make, in my opinion, a good informed decision. And that is what we're, you know, trying to seek. There is also a group that it wouldn't matter what you did, they're never going to take this vaccine. And it's not very difficult to figure out who that is within 5 minutes of the conversation, sometimes just two. And we don't, you know, we don't keep banging on that door. We say, well, if you change your mind, we're here. Come on back. We'd love to give you the vaccine when you're ready.
Do a lot of your patients have comorbidities, you know, making them more vulnerable to this disease?
Oh, yes.
And dying from it?
Well, we're in Arkansas, so we got a lot of high blood pressure and obesity and heart disease. And so that's just sort of a given. But yes, to your point, I do have a pretty good number of Medicare patients. We have patients, a lot of diabetic and hypertensive patients. We got a lot of heart disease here. So we certainly see that a lot. We also see a lot of children on Medicaid. So we've got, you know, we think about them a lot. They, you know, in our particular town, kids are back in school, it's in-person school. And even if there was a virtual option, which right this moment, there's not, but if there were, you know, a lot of these kids' parents work, there's no one at home. So they're also a vulnerable population with this Delta variant. I've diagnosed as young as a 3-month-old in my office.
Wow.
So we're seeing it at all levels in the children population and children's hospital here in Arkansas, which is a great regional children's hospital, premier in the country. I mean, they've been maxed out. Kids are waiting in the emergency room. I've had kids that I've had to send up there who couldn't get a bed yet because it's just been so busy. So I think all of that population that we see is vulnerable. And the other side of that is we can't get the patients in the hospital for normal problems either. You know, yes. Had a baby that came in as a new patient 12 a week ago, and a brand new baby that had neonatal jaundice and had a high bilirubin and needed to go in for some phototherapy and couldn't get through the ER. I had to figure out a way to bypass that, get them to make an exception, put the baby in an area of the hospital that would normally not be for someone coming back in as an outpatient just to get their phototherapy, because there were 30 people in front of them in the emergency room being triaged.
Wow.
So, you know, when you get that, and I think that makes I think that also makes an impression on people. When you start, you know, I tell people all the time, now's not the time to clean out your gutters on the ladder. Now's not the time to go, you know, skateboarding. Don't break your hip. Don't have a car wreck. There's no place to go. I think that touches, you know, people just don't think about that sometimes. And once they do start thinking about it, they think, but the biggest seller for us, to be honest with you, is not even the comorbidities, because you can tell these patients over and over and over, you're a high risk. The biggest seller for me is to tell them, you can give this to your friends and family and people at church and work before you ever know you have it. You know, you may not care what it does to you, but would you care if you gave it to someone else who was a friend of yours who gave it to their mama and she died? And when you start having that conversation, you can see the look on people's faces like, yeah, that's not something that I was really thinking about. I was thinking about what I'm willing to do for my own personal risk. When you have that conversation about how you affect others, then sometimes you can gain some ground with people.
Do you require masking in your clinic?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do. Absolutely. All of our employees wear masks. We had a little while in the early summer, like late spring, because everyone in my office is vaccinated 100%. And so we had a while when it looked like, I mean, we weren't having any positive cases at all. And we let our employees start going without a mask when patients weren't in the building. We still wore masks when patients were being seen. But, you know, before hours and after hours and lunch, everyone take their mask off. Then when we started to see the Delta surge, we started wearing masks again. And we've already had one of our employees get COVID who is vaccinated. So we're going to continue to wear masks until we see a pretty significant decline or until we're all able to get our booster. We got our shot in December and January when Pfizer first came out, because the local hospital provided it for all the healthcare workers in the county. So this month actually is going to be 8 months for us. And as soon as they make the announcement later in the month, I'm sure everyone here will go ahead and get a booster.
Do you require it of your patients?
Vaccinations or, no, or masks?
Masking.
Yes, I do. Yes. As a matter of fact, we'll always have someone who gets angry or says they're not coming in. And, you know, that's one of the benefits. I don't know if it's a reason to be an independent, but when you're an independent, you can say, well, you know, I'm sorry that you feel that way, but this is my practice. It's my business. And I'm trying to protect not only my staff, but my other patients. And it doesn't matter to me if you like it or not. That's going to be our rule. You know, I had a patient try to walk out of my waiting room. He got really angry, and he's someone I've known since I was a kid. And he just said, you know, this is ridiculous. And the governor says we don't have to wear a mask. And I just explained to him that, you know, if I came into his place of business and his requirement was to wear a mask, whether I agreed or not, I'd wear it because I have respect for him. And, you know, he kind of settled down and he said, you know, I just didn't think about it that way. And I apologize. I don't agree with it, but you're exactly right. And he put his mask back on and stayed. So again, I think trying to be calm with people and trying to explain what your rationale is important. We're trying not to shame people or tell people that they, you know, need to do this or they're dumb if they don't, you know, regardless of what my personal feelings are. When it comes to being a physician and when it comes to running this practice, we try our best to be as accessible and open to everyone as we can, as long as it's safe for everyone else.
Arkansas has about 41% of its population fully vaccinated. That's 45th in the country. Why do you think the vaccination rate is so low in the state?
I think a variety of reasons. This is all just, I guess, subjective as far as concerned.
But I think you live there and you treat patients.
Because I think people, because they're, I hear this all the time. I hear people say, well, I don't go anywhere. I stay at home. I don't do anything. I keep my distance. I wear my mask. And so people search for a rationale not to do, you know, whatever it is that they don't want to do. And in this case, it's getting the vaccine. That does play some role, because as a rural state, people kind of get this, I don't know, this feeling that, well, I'm not in the big city and I'm not around with a lot of people. And I don't work in an office setting, so I should be okay. The second thing is there's probably a lot of social media bias depending on where you get your news from. And Arkansas, a lot of our patients are pretty conservative. And, you know, if you look at the national trends, there tends to be less vaccination in highly conservative areas than there are in liberal areas. That probably plays some role. And then I think the other thing is people don't realize that, I mean, we have a hard time every year getting people to take a flu shot. I mean, patients will say, I never get sick. I don't need the flu shot. And then you have to have a conversation with them about how, well, the reason we get flu shots is not just to protect you, but it's to protect the community. And you can talk about herd immunity all day, but at the end of the day, people just discount that because they've become used to it. And so in a lot of their minds, they think this is just another form of the flu. They've been told that on social media. They've heard that. And for the ones of them who have not had a friend or family member get really sick yet, they still, it's kind of like, you know, when you see something on television that's happening in the Middle East, you shake your head and you feel real bad. But unless you served or you were over there, it's hard for people to have that, like, really affect me kind of feeling. But more and more, we're seeing patients who say, yeah, I had a friend at work that died. I mean, I've lost some friends in this pandemic. And more and more, you know, more and more of us are doing that. And the more that happens, it's sad. It's sad that it takes that. But the more that happens, the more people kind of tune in. And I think Arkansas, we weren't hit very hard with the first round of the pandemic in 2020. So that was a blessing, but a curse as well, because it did not spur a lot of people to run off and get the vaccine. And I think what happened was they sort of thought, well, you know, I've kind of missed it. And we see our numbers going down in February and March and toward April of 2021. So people think, it's over. You know, they're opening the country back up. I skirted around and I didn't have to get this vaccine. And true, this past early spring and summer, our numbers in Arkansas were really low. So I think people, a lot of people miss that impetus to go hurry up and get it. And then once Delta hit, it spread so quickly that we did see an uptick, obviously, but we were nowhere where we needed to be in terms of getting over that threshold of at least 50% and ideally 70, 80%. And I worry a little bit now, actually I worry a lot about the fact that people who have been vaccinated are still getting the virus. I'm starting to get that argument from patients. Well, it doesn't matter if I get it or not, I can still get infected. And so you have to have another conversation to explain, yes, but it's going to keep you out of the ICU and probably out of the hospital and for sure, hopefully keep you from dying. That's a whole other conversation. It's just kind of exhausting after a while to do that, you know, 20, 30 times every day. And that was another reason, to be honest with you, to kind of put that public service announcement out. Last year, when the vaccine was just coming out, I actually put out three little videos on my Facebook page explaining about the virus, how they made the vaccine so quickly and why I thought it was safe. It was three little 6-minute videos. And I just put it on my Facebook page because I was literally having to tell this story literally every patient I saw. And I would just start saying, hey, look at my Facebook page. And I didn't know that it would take off or what. It got 23,000 views. I mean, people wanted to know about it and people still want to know about it. But it's just hard to do it one at a time. So we feel like, you know, the more we can sort of mass communicate, the better off we'll be.
You referenced influenza a minute ago. What do you see ahead for the fall when flu starts to show up again?
Yeah, well, you know, last year, that was a big fear. We thought, oh, my gosh, what's going to happen when COVID and flu patients come in? I had two flu patients last year, two. I've been in practice in Malvern since 1997, and this is my hometown. And every year we get swamped with the flu every year. And last year we didn't because everyone was wearing a mask because they didn't want to get COVID. This year, I fear my last year's fear is going to come true. We've got so much more resistance to mask wear that I feel like there's going to be a lot of that. And that makes it just makes it so difficult in a in an office setting for triage, for testing, because everybody's got to get a flu test and a COVID test. And you can't just get one and assume that because somebody has the flu, they don't also have COVID. So, you know, you're going to be testing a lot. That takes time. It that slows things down. And we feel like it's going to be, you know, we hope it's not. Gosh, I pray that people put on their mask and do like they're supposed to. But I fear that it's going to be a nightmare once we see flu start to tick up. And in our school system, they don't have a mask requirement. They recommend them and encourage them, but they haven't voted to have a mask mandate at this point. And we're already seeing lots of kids quarantined. I'm seeing positive kids in my office on a daily basis. So it won't be long at all before somebody gets the flu. And when they do, and there's no mask mandate, it's going to be bedlam, because we're going to have to be trying to figure out what this kid has. Every kid that coughs or sneezes or has a fever, they're sending home and won't let them come back until they get a test or whatever. So, I mean, our work's going to be cut out for us, I'm afraid.
Well, I think you're going to have a lot of company around the country because there are a lot of districts that are mandating masks.
That's right.
I think they will experience the same thing to greater or lesser degree.
I think you're right. I think you're right.
Do you get a lot of people saying that, or do you get any people saying that they saw the PSA?
Yeah, we do. We because they put me on the actual commercial, like I'm the one. So all my patients are kidding me about, am I moving to Hollywood?
Yeah.
I told them that, you know, if this pandemic keeps going, I'm looking for any off ramp out of
You're
this
going to Hollywood, doc.
That's right. Anything I could do. No, we do. We do get a lot of people commenting, and we chose to run this locally at the news spot hour for the local, the Central Arkansas television station, because we're again, we're looking for that group of people that we think are still on the fence. I mean, we're not trying to, we know those people who want to look every day and see what the weather's going to be or want to see what the local news is. Those are the people that we feel like we have the greatest chance of touching and then encouraging to do what we think is the right thing. So, yeah, we're getting feedback, and it's been positive. I haven't gotten any negative feedback at this point. Everyone's been real, real positive and congratulatory that we're actually saying something. That's the thing I think that surprised me the most, is how many people have told me they're proud of me and our group for saying something. Because, you know, at the end of the day, I think if patients won't agree to get the vaccine, okay, well, okay. But you can't, you know, they can't disagree with being able to say that we're doing the thing that we think is the right thing. If we say we think this is the right thing, then people respect that, even if they don't agree with you. And respect, mutual respect between doctor and patient or nurse practitioner and patient, that's very important in the primary care relationship. So we don't think that we've done anything to infringe upon that. We think, on the other hand, we're trying to take a stand and say, we think this is something that's important for you. We have your best interest at heart. No one is incentivizing us to do this or say this. This is just us speaking as a group. And I think people get that. And I'm hopeful that they will.
Are you seeing any patients who've tried to take ivermectin?
Yeah, I have had some patients who told me that they're doing that. Of course, I advise them not to do that. And it pretty quickly can dissolve into a not a very good conversation if you're not careful. So I really just try and keep it above board and say, you know, the treatments that I'm going to recommend for you are treatments that have been studied and have been approved and endorsed by the vast majority of the medical community, that I'm not going to prescribe medication that is not indicated. And it, you know, and a lot of times patients will say, well, I don't, you know, why not? If that's what I want, why not give it to me? And I have to explain to them that, you know, my job is to is to first do no harm. And until I feel confident enough that the medical community and science-based endorsement from the FDA has said that that would be a treatment that we should use, that I'm not going to do it. And I've also told some people that, obviously, I mean, in Arkansas, we've had a huge uptick in calls to poison control for people who've gotten sick after taking ivermectin, especially people who are going to the co-op or Tractor Supply and buying, you know, their own ivermectin. They're not even getting it from a doctor. So there's a lot of danger in that, obviously. If, you know, if they sponsor a study that shows that ivermectin works, gosh, we'll all be first in line to start prescribing it. That's the thing that I try and tell my patients when they say, well, the government doesn't want us to have it or this, that, and the other, you know, then you really have to back it up and say, do you really think that there's something for me to gain by not giving you something that would help? You know, it's still back to that trust relationship. You trust me. I'm telling you what I think is right, and I'm not going to let any patient push me or bully me into doing something that I don't think is right. And I think my patients understand that. We have that relationship. Do I know that there are some of them out there that are still going to go get it or still take it or go to another doctor and get it? Sure. You know, I'm not going to, I've never had an attitude that says, if you don't do what I say, you can't be my patient. You know, I respect an adult's freedom to be able to make whatever decision they want to make. I just don't always think it's the right one. And I always had to put my head on my pillow at the end of the day and have a clear conscience about what it is that I'm prescribing and not prescribing. And I couldn't do that if I was given ivermectin, so I'm not going to be doing it.
You ever find yourself getting frustrated, demoralized about all this and or members of your staff? And if so, what do you tell them? What do you tell yourself?
Frustrated, yes, not so much demoralized, because we still feel like if we can make a difference on a day-to-day basis for one patient, then you know, we're doing some good. Frustrated, though, absolutely. I mean, if I had a nickel for every time I had used the phrase, I just don't understand why, and then fill in the blank, why people won't get their shot, why people, you know, won't wear a mask. I mean, I'd be rich because we run into that literally every day. But as far as the staff is concerned, we have a pretty close-knit group. We consider our staff, we have, counting myself, we have 18 employees, a couple of nurse practitioners and several nurses and office staff. And we sort of have from the get-go approached this whole pandemic from the standpoint that we have a service to provide to our patients. Even though this is a job that we come to every day, we feel like we're performing a service to our community by taking care of people, not just who have COVID, but who still have diabetes and heart disease and COPD and other problems that still go on, even though there's a pandemic. And if not us, then who? And so we have been very cautious. I've tried to be real transparent with the decisions that I've made. Last year when the pandemic started and we got our disaster loan, our SBA loan, I took that money and built a new waiting room on the back of my building and cordoned off the back three rooms and changed the HVAC system so that it's all enclosed with a filter. And we see all our sick patients on one end of the building now and all our well patients on the other end of the building, in an effort not just to protect our patients, to protect our staff. And, you know, we didn't have, when the pandemic started, we didn't have any PPE at all. I mean, we didn't have any because we never needed it or used it in our setting. And Aliday, the company I mentioned, actually for all its practices across the country provided masks and gowns and gloves early on when we just couldn't get them because Wow. There was no place selling them. Yeah. They did that for all their practices. So they've been a great partner in all this, but that sort of sense of camaraderie that we had as a group up here working, I'll tell you, I think you will, if you ask my employees, I think most of them would say that in an ironic way, they feel safer when they're up here at the office working, even though we're seeing COVID patients, than they do when they're at home or at Walmart or at the grocery store, because we are really dotting our I's and crossing our T's and making sure we're wearing our mask and our gloves and cleaning. And so there's a heightened sense of awareness of what we're doing. And we've had to be that way, but also we've tried to tell, you know, our employees that we understand it's tough. I mean, several of our girls have kids at home. They had, some of them had to take off last year when the schools were closed. I mean, it's just been a battle. And we try to give them little breaks when we can, like we're going to give them off this Friday before Labor Day and let them have a free day. You know, we try to do those things. You have to do it a little bit. And we're running into competition, you know. Hospitals are offering these huge sign-on bonuses and asking nurses to come work for $50, $60 an hour. And I understand why they're doing it and that they need it, but, you know, I can't see the patients that I see without nurses either. So it has been a struggle and worry for all of us. But I think by and large, just being open and transparent, we visit amongst each other. We talk about, you know, our families and how they're doing, and we care for one another. I mean, I've been in this town for a long time, but most of my employees have worked for me for over 10 years. You know, we don't have a very high turnover rate because, you know, we try to be that kind of an atmosphere where we support each other. And if we hadn't been that way, if it had been a lot more institutional when all this started, I don't know that we could have stayed in business. When we had to shut down in March of 2020 and convert strictly to televisits, we were able, I got the PPP loan, but we were able to keep all our employees. I didn't have to lay anybody off at that point for as far as, you know, the immediate release. Eventually we did lose a nurse practitioner, but just everyone's volume was down at that time. But, you know, that was a tough time, and we made it through that. So our attitude now is, you know, now we know how to do this. We've been doing it for a long time. As long as we're safe and try and take the precautions we're supposed to take, there's no sense in worrying about predicting the future. You just have to try and get through each day, and that's the way we're approaching it.
Do you have any advice for other family docs out there who are trying to persuade their patients to get vaccinated against COVID?
You know, I think for me, the thing that I've started to do more than, you know, talk about the science, which a lot of us in our minds think, well, talk about the science, people get that. In the family practice setting, there'll be some patients who want you to talk about the science, but most of the patients, I think, want to be able to hear you say, this is what I'm doing for me. This is what I'm doing for my family. This is what I would do if I were in your shoes. You know, you have to make your own decision, but this is the reason I'm making my decision. It's the science, sure, and I don't mind talking about that. But most of the patients who come to me have already been all over Google. They've read all the stuff. The problem is they just don't have a good way of interpreting that stuff because they don't live in the world that I live in. So for me to be able to sort of bear witness and say, yeah, you know, there's a reason that I'm doing it, and here's the reason. I think that has made more difference than anything for me. So I would advise that, share your own testimonial, and also leave the door open. Don't, you know, avoid that, boy, that temptation to be frustrated with a patient, because it's on the inside, but you got to keep it on the inside, because you never know when the next week they may call you and say, you know, okay, I changed my mind. I just opened a thank you card yesterday from a patient of mine who has a young 20-something-year-old son. And she came in and we were visiting, and she was really upset because her son just wouldn't get the vaccine. And it just so happened that the next week, her son wound up coming in for something else unrelated. And I saw him, and I, of course, knew that he wasn't getting vaccinated. And so he and I visited. He's an intelligent young man. We talked for 10, 15 minutes. And I just told him, I said, well, if you change your mind, just let me know. And he said, okay. And it was a pleasant conversation. And she sent, I got a thank you card from her yesterday. He didn't get his vaccine from me, but he did go get his vaccine. And she said, I don't know what you said to him, but he's gotten his vaccine. I'm really happy. You know, thank you so much for that. And I know that it was a conversation. It wasn't his research. It was a conversation that made a difference. So being able to have that conversation, I still think is worthwhile. You know, it's like the story about the little kid on the beach, where there's all these starfish are washed up on the beach, and he's throwing these starfish back in the ocean because the tide's gone out. This man walks up and looks at him and says, son, you can't save all these starfish. And He's holding one in his hand and he looks at it and he throws it in the ocean. He said, well, I just saved that one. So as long as you can make a one at a time difference, I think it's worth making a difference.
Well, Dr. Sean Purfoy, thank you very much. I think our audience will find this very helpful.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you thinking of us. And I hope that you'll continue to be safe, and my best to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. And when you do, please leave a review. You can find previous podcast episodes on our website, medicaleconomics.com, under the Media tab. We welcome your comments and suggestions for future podcast topics. You can email these to us at medec@mjhlifesciences.com. And while visiting our website, be sure to check out the latest news about the business of healthcare and explore the many other resources you'll find there. We hope you'll listen next month for a new episode of Off the Chart with Medical Economics.